Welcome back to Techtopia, the podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today on the show is Ryan Gorman. He's a former journalist and marketer. This is Techtopia. This episode of Technotopia is sponsored by CheapTranscription.io. CheapTranscription offers 10 cent per minute transcriptions using our happy robots or 85 cents per minute using our human assistants. CheapTranscription.io is cheaper and faster than everyone else. CheapTranscription.io. This episode of Technotopia is brought to you by Typewriter.plus. Typewriter.plus is a full-service editorial agency that brings amazing editors from places like the New York Times and TechCrunch to work on your writing. Need a blog post, a white paper, a presentation? The Typewriter team can write or edit anything on nearly any topic. Visit them at typewriter.plus for a free quote. That's typewriter.plus, typewriter.plus. Welcome back to Techtopia, a podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today on the show, we have Ryan Gorman. He's the founder of RGRPR. Did I get that one right?
RGPR.
I'm sorry. He's the founder of RGPR. You're out in, where are you? You're in Queens. So you're around the corner from us.
Correct. Yeah, Astoria.
How has your quarantine been?
It's been interesting, to say the least. Before I get into that, I just want to thank you for having me on. It's good to chat with you, John. So really appreciate the opportunity. So quarantine was interesting because, I work with a handful of firms, have worked with a handful of firms based in China, and I was kind of hyper aware of the pandemic before it made its way to the U.S. So I started, prepping ahead of time because at the same time, my wife was in her third trimester of pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So by the middle of February, we had fully stocked up on canned goods and diapers and frozen food and N95 masks and gloves and hand sanitizer. And we were wearing masks everywhere we went at a point where no one else was, and people were taking pictures of us because we looked like something out of the plague. funny enough, we still caught coronavirus anyway.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was not fun. It was the worst 3 weeks of my life. And my wife being pregnant, I think, the amount of stress and fear and uncertainty she had over both her health and the baby's health, I think, isn't something that we'll hopefully ever have to go through again.
And everything came out okay? Everybody's fine now?
Yeah. It started out pretty scary being in the hospital, Lenox Hill, here in the city, and both testing positive and being given all these IVs, medicine, and what have you, and being held for observation. But we were ultimately sent home. And after about 3 weeks, the symptoms subsided and our baby was born fully healthy, no problems or complications, and everything appears to be okay. Thank God, thankfully.
You know what? I don't think anybody really talks about what the actual disease feels like. What did you guys have to go through?
Sure. So my symptoms were a little different from my wife's. She experienced a very high fever, shortness of breath, fatigue, chills, nausea, what have you, an ability to smell. And I didn't really have the shortness of breath or the fever, but I had these crippling headaches that I've never had in my entire life. They were almost like migraines I used to get in my 20s, but so much more severe. And then I had confusion and disorientation, and inability to focus, fatigue. And I couldn't smell or taste for a while. I liked it to trying to wake up from both a concussion and a hangover at the same time, but for 3 weeks, it was just awful.
Wow. And it wasn't, you didn't get to a point where you had to be on a ventilator or anything?
Oh, neither of us did. No, thank God. We weren't that severe, but I mean, we were both glued to the couch because of the fatigue. It was just overwhelming,
So you dealt with the defining experience of, I guess, the early 21st century. How do you think it's changed your outlook on all this stuff? How do you think the future, what do you think the future looks like for these sorts of things, these sorts of pandemics?
Sure. I think, this is a great learning experience for the U.S. In Asia, they kind of have this down to a science. To a large degree. Nothing's perfect, of course, but you see the way Japan handled it, the way Korea handled it. It was vastly different than the way the U.S. handled it. And I think we're going to learn quite a bit about how to handle these things going forward. And, you know, I think we'll take them a bit more seriously. That said, I don't think I'll be shaking anyone's hand anytime soon, if ever again. we're up to elbow bumps. And it's funny, I was even doing elbow bumps back in January.
Yeah,
I wasn't shaking anyone's hand, and still we got infected. So, I mean, I don't think there's any foolproof measure you can take aside from hermetically sealing yourself inside a bubble. But that's impossible, and you just have to hope for the best. But I don't think, hopefully, they won't be as widespread, these pandemics, in the future, and as deadly in the future as this one has been.
Yeah, that's the odd thing. It seems like we've changed quite a bit in terms of our attitudes towards socializing, etc. What do you think about all the unlock on the lockdowns? And do you think we need lockdowns in places where it's not as prevalent?
I mean, I think that's been proven in what's happened with the recent outbreak, the surge, right? So it was prevalent here in New York and in the greater metro area much sooner, and it broke out much sooner than it did elsewhere in the country. So those parts of the country may have initially locked down or restricted movement, but they quickly reopened. We're talking like South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Texas. Mm-hmm. And there was an article in the New York Times back on April 2nd, in which they had a map that showed people's movement based on cell phone data. And if you compare that map of people's movement to where the outbreak is currently really surging right now, and there's a remarkable coincidence. Places where people couldn't move, couldn't go anywhere, couldn't do anything, like New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, there were clearly on the downswing. Whereas those places further south, that tended to be a bit more less cautious, they're definitely seeing quite the surge.
That's pretty odd. That's really strange that would happen. I wonder what the anyway, what does this look like in terms of telling stories about products in the future? I know that you're a former journalist, you do a lot of PR, tech PR. Mm-hmm. What do you think the events world looks like? What do you think the launch of new products looks like in this era?
Sure. So I think the events world, that's a great question, by the way, because so many people, you know, last year alone, I traveled about 80,000 miles. I was in Europe, I was in Asia, mm-hmm. all over the country, you know, all because of these events. And I think ultimately they will come back. It's going to take a while before, or if they ever return to the level they were at, there may be less events, but we're not ever going to fully exit the trade show or conference industry. And I think events like, you know, CoinDesk's Consensus or Money 2020 or what have you, I think they'll ultimately come back because they're important to the industry. And they're not just places to launch products and watch panels. They're places where people actually meet each other mm-hmm. and get a face to a name, or you don't see someone just on a Zoom window. It's so much more impersonal when you only deal with people that way. And it facilitates transactions in business. I think product launches, though, I mean, Apple has proven that you don't necessarily need a huge event to launch a product in person mm-hmm. with the Worldwide Developer Conference this week, launching a new iOS. And I think maybe some of those will going forward be virtual, but ultimately people, you know, history tends to repeat itself. We'll go back to the way things were, and hopefully we just do it in a little bit more cautious of a way.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I would like to see what the events. I mean, 2021 is going to be a little strange. Mm. 2022. I mean, the human animal. We're a forgetful race. So I can only imagine we'll be French kissing each other on at the Consensus 2022 or something like that.
Perhaps that, but I won't be sharing drinks with anyone or shaking hands with anyone.
Interesting. Okay. Good. All right. There you go. How has this experience changed your view of the future? What do you think the future looks like now? I mean, you basically have a new baby. You're obviously excited about that. But what do you think their life is going to look like?
That's a great question. You know, I think in years past, I would go to baseball games or MLS matches, NYCFC at Yankee Stadium. And you'd see parents with their young children in like those slings, like maybe a 1-year-old or a 2-year-old. And I always thought to myself, when I have a son, or if I have a son, it would be great to be able to bring him to his first soccer match or his first baseball game, you know, and have him have that experience at a young age. But I just don't think that for the foreseeable future that that's possible. And that's kind of, it kind of makes me a little sad, because I was at baseball games at a very young age. It's one of the defining experiences of my childhood with my father, was the fact that we'd go to at least a dozen baseball games almost every summer. And the thought of not being able to share that with my son really, you know, it's kind of sad. But I think ultimately, you know, we may not gather in large crowds anytime soon, but like you said, you know, we're a forgetful race, and we're also a very social being. So, you know, ultimately things will return to the way they were, barring another pandemic anytime soon. They kind of have to. You know, the economy is built around that.
Do you see any general societal changes that might happen? I mean, one of the premises that I feel like that we haven't been thinking about is that something like the Summer of Love, et cetera, came technically out of pandemics, also came out of a lot of societal upheavals.
Okay.
And whenever that happens, there's people who run off to the Catskills. There's people who I don't know, start checking their auras with crystals. And then there's also people who become deeply conservative and concerned about and paranoid, essentially. So what happens here?
Right. So I think, you know, the migration, the mass migration of people out of crowded areas like New York and out of cities. I mean, I think, 400,000 people have left New York in the last month. I think that that's not going to reverse anytime soon. And that trend may continue well into the new year, especially as people tend to work more remotely versus in offices. But I think younger people, they tend to be a bit more liberal with their reactions to things, and not liberal in the political sense, but in the less pragmatic sense, right? When I was younger, I didn't really think through the consequences of my actions as a teenager and in my early 20s. And I think it's a little much to expect someone of that age now to really fully consider that as well, because you don't have the worldview and the context. So yeah, I can see something like a Summer of Love happening, or you know, a mass gathering where hopefully it doesn't result in an outbreak. But I think once that occurs, it'll be like the dam will open and things will quickly return back to the way they were. But, you know, it's going to take some time. I really do believe that nothing's going to return to normal anytime soon.
Fascinating. What does the world look like in 20 years? Even from your clients or whoever you talk to, have you seen anything really cool and forward thinking?
Wow. I mean, 20 years. How much the world has changed in the last 20 years. 20 years ago, I was in high school. I actually graduated exactly 20 years ago today. It was my graduation ceremony. And since then, I mean, what, mobile phones, the only thing you could do is play that worm game on it. Mm-hmm. And then they've turned into massive supercomputers in our pockets, massively powerful supercomputers in our pockets, and they've changed the world. So I think a lot of change, whatever changes next, I think will be driven by technology. More than anything else. Human attitudes don't necessarily always change. Human behavior doesn't necessarily change, but technology can obviate certain jobs or certain social functions or certain needs. And I think that there are things that are going to be invented and products that will come to market that we don't even know about yet, that haven't even been thought of yet. And I think those will be what really drives the bulk of change. You know, 5 years ago, if you told me that someone could send a rocket up into space and then land it on an unmanned drone ship in the ocean and keep reusing that rocket instead of having a NASA shuttle, I would have laughed in your face. But here we are, we're doing that now with people. So I really wouldn't even be able to begin to envision the type of change that'll happen over the next 20 years.
All right, very cool. Where can people check out what you're working on?
Sure. So you can find me on Twitter at GormoXJourno. That's GormoXJourno. And online at GormanStrategies.com.
All right. Wonderful. Thanks for joining us, Ryan. This has been Technotopia. I'm John Biggs. We will see you next week.
Thanks, John.
Technotopia is brought to you by Happy Fun Corp. Happy Fun Corp is a design-driven technology company in Brooklyn, New York that specializes in building mobile and web applications for startups and Fortune 500 companies. Whether it's a new mobile or web application that will help people experience the internet in a fun new way, or software that will interface with a new piece of top-secret hardware, Happy Fun Corp is always up to the challenge. Big or small, Happy Fun Corp loves building software and loves working with great people. Come build with them. HappyFunCorp.com.